Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a case that really shines a light on some complex legal issues. United States v. Roy Hebron.
Yeah, public corruption, disaster relief fraud. It's got a lot packed in.
It does. So consider this your guided tour, especially if you're navigating the legal field into how the system handles these things. We're asking, you know, can the government backtrack on a plea deal?
And how do courts even figure out the loss when the fraud is, well, everywhere? It obscures the legitimate stuff.
Exactly. So let's introduce Roy Hebron. He was the mayor, the former mayor of Ball, Louisiana.
Right. And this all kicks off after Hurricanes Rita and Gustav hit devastating storms.
Absolutely. The core issue, misuse of funds, money that was supposed to help the community rebuild. A real breach of trust.
A huge breach. And the details of the scheme. It wasn't just small errors.
No, not at all. The sources we looked at suggest Hebron orchestrated this plan to inflate the reimbursement claims the town sent to FEMA.
Deliberately. We're talking falsifying work hours, equipment usage records.
Even vehicle logs. Things that didn't happen or were exaggerated.
And the amount. It wasn't insignificant. Over $300,000 in fraudulent claims.
Think about that. $300,000 meant for people struggling after a disaster.
It really underscores the seriousness, the violation of public trust when those funds get diverted.
Okay, so the scheme gets uncovered. What happens next legally?
Well, as you'd expect, a major investigation. The FBI, Department of Homeland Security, they spent 30 months on this.
Wow, 2.5 years. That shows how seriously they took it.
Definitely. And it led to a 3-count indictment. Conspiracy, major disaster fraud, theft of government money, serious charges.
But here's a key turn. Hebron decides to plead guilty.
Right, but only to 1 count. Conspiracy to defraud the United States. That's under 18 U.S.C. Section 371.
And that specific statute is interesting, legally speaking. It doesn't require an overt act to be proven.
Exactly. Unlike some other conspiracy laws, just the agreement to commit the fraud is enough for a conviction under 371. That's a critical nuance for law students to pick up on.
So he pleads guilty to that conspiracy charge. What are the consequences? Sentencing time.
And the sentence was pretty significant. 48 months, 4 years in prison.
Plus 3 years of supervised release afterwards.
And financially. A $25,000 fine plus restitution to FEMA. Over $105,000.
Right. Trying to make FEMA whole. At least partially. There was also a standard $100 assessment and 200 hours of community service.
And those financial hits didn't stop there. The sources say they garnished parts of his municipal retirement account.
And even his life insurance policy to pay that restitution. It shows the real, tangible consequences beyond just jail time.
Absolutely. Long-lasting financial burdens.
And there's more. The conviction meant he was constitutionally barred from holding public office again.
Which is fascinating because he actually tried to run for mayor again in 2018, didn't he? And won.
He did. But then he was prevented from taking office precisely because of that felony conviction bar. It really highlights the long-term civic consequences.
It's a major lasting impact.
Okay, so let's get into the real legal meat of the appeal. The plea agreement itself. This is where it gets tricky.
Right. The agreement Hebron signed stipulated a loss amount of less than $200,000. That was the deal.
But then the government later endorsed the pre-sentence report, the PSR.
Which is prepared by probation, provides background, calculates loss.
Exactly. And that report calculated the loss at over $320,000. A big difference.
A huge difference. So Hebron argues, hey, you breached the deal.
And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals looked at this. And surprisingly, maybe, they actually agreed with Hebron on one point.
They did.
Yeah, the majority said the government did breach the agreement by pushing for that higher loss figure after agreeing to the lower one.
Okay, so a breach occurred, but there's always a but, isn't there?
Right. Here's the crucial part. The court said, yes, it was a breach, but it didn't affect Hebron's substantial rights.
Meaning it didn't actually change the outcome.
Essentially, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Their reasoning was the judge's final sentence was based on the PSR anyway. And the sentencing guidelines, and Hebron hadn't offered any credible alternative calculation for the legitimate claims.
Ah, so the government's mistake didn't actually prejudice him in the end, according to the court. It's a fine line between a procedural error and one that warrants overturning a sentence.
Exactly. The court was saying, okay, the government maybe messed up on its recommendation, but the judge considered everything, and Hebron didn't give us anything to work with on his side.
Which leads perfectly into the second big issue. How do you calculate the loss in a situation like this?
Right. When the fraud is so pervasive, so tangled up with potentially legitimate claims, How do you separate them?
And the Fifth Circuit laid down a pretty important principle here. They said if the government shows the fraud is so widespread that separating legitimate from fraudulent is basically impossible,
then the burden shifts. It flips to the defendant.
Right. Hebron then had to prove which specific amounts were legitimate.
And the court explicitly found, quote, Hebron provided no evidence to furnish a reasonable estimate of legitimate claims. That's the kicker.
So because he couldn't untangle the mess he allegedly made, the court didn't have to either.
It's like that spilled ink analogy they used. If you obscure the document with fraud, you can't complain later that no one can read the original text underneath.
You're held responsible for the difficulty you created.
And this connects directly to intended loss versus actual loss in sentencing, right? That's always a big deal in fraud cases.
Huge. Intended loss is often what drives the sentence, even if the actual amount stolen was less, because Hebron didn't show what wasn't intended fraud.
The court could treat the whole inflated amount as the intended loss, impacting the sentence.
It's similar maybe to the burden shifting you see in like McDonnell Douglas cases in employment law. The burden starts with one party, then shifts if certain conditions are met.
That's a good comparison. Show pervasive fraud, then the defendant has to provide the legitimate explanation or breakdown.
Exactly. It's about who has to bring forward the evidence when things get murky because of alleged wrongdoing.
So let's distill this. Key takeaways from Hebron for, you know, our listeners' future legal minds.
Well, first, courts can treat the whole claim amount as intended loss in these pervasive fraud cases unless the defense brings solid proof of legitimate parts. That's a high bar.
Definitely. Second, public officials are held to a high standard. Breach that trust, especially with disaster funds, and the consequences are severe. Prison, fines, losing the right to hold office.
And third, practically speaking, plea agreements. Get everything in writing. Be incredibly specific about things like loss amounts and how they'll be handled.
Absolutely crucial. And if you're defending a fraud case like this, be ready with evidence. You have to be able to separate the legitimate fraud from the alleged fraud.
You can't just say some of it was legit. You need proof. The court made that crystal clear. You can't benefit from the confusion you allegedly caused.
So wrapping up this deep dive on United States v. Roy Hebron, it shows the serious fallout from defrauding relief programs.
And it shows courts won't let defendants hide behind the complexity of their own alleged fraud. That burden shifting is key.
It really is. Which leaves us with a final thought, maybe. What are those core ethical duties of public officials in a crisis?
And how does the legal system, using tools like burden shifting, balance justice with the sheer difficulty of proving widespread fraud?
Lots to think about there as you continue exploring the legal world. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.